You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, May 22nd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Casual Friday, folks. Back wearing my soft-collared shirt. And I have shaved off at least a portion of my facial hair. So to celebrate on the program today, Brandon Sutton will be joining us. Pretty Bad Lefty on Twitter and host of the Discourse podcast. Following that, Matthew Film Guy will be here to catch us up on what we should be streaming during this, I don't know, quasi-semi, certainly deteriorating lockdown. Meanwhile, also on the show today, hydroxy linked to increased death in corona patients, according to a new study. Meanwhile, Mike Pompeo ordered a State Department, or ordered his State Department, I should say, to invent an emergency to justify an emergency Saudi arms sales. Treasurer Steve Mnuchin signals we will need more COVID-19 relief money. Biden gaffes his way to an 8-point national lead against Trump. CDC revises surfaces protocols. Georgia shows what happens if you open it up and they don't come. Meanwhile, folks, breathe easy. American billionaires made $434 billion since the start of the lockdown. Phew. QAnoner John Ratcliffe confirmed by the Republicans as the next director of national intelligence. Meanwhile, same Republicans worry about Martha McSally's Senate loss in Arizona. Cory Gardner worries about himself losing in Colorado. And Kelly Loeffler pays tribute, literally, to Donald Trump for support. Lastly, polls show Black and Latino Americans are three times as likely to know a person who have died from COVID-19. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Matt and Brendan are on the line with us. Gentlemen, hello. Hope everybody is safe.
Safe and sound.
Safer with you with that mustache here.
All right. There you go. That's why I wore it, just because I knew you guys would be feeling a lot better if I was wearing a mustache today. And so I am. I promise you this is going to stay. I've got mixed reviews on the home front. My daughter thinks that it makes me look like a murderer. So I don't know why that's the case.
But, that's what my girlfriend's mom thinks about me too, with my mustache. So,
And that sounds like it's you actually have a strategy behind that.
She likes me besides that.
Oh, she does. And so you just don't want it to get too. You don't want to get too much support.
Exactly.
From mom. Yeah, that's a smart move. Folks, it's Friday. Let me just remind you, this program relies on your support. carry on. Obviously, in the midst of this, a lot of folks have lost their jobs. We've had a significant number of members who have had to convert to complimentary memberships, which we offer here because we don't want to lock anybody out of the membership. If you're one of those folks who are not under financial stress now or are not anticipating any financial stress, it's a very weird situation we have. And, you know, there are some, and certainly, you know, more white collar workers and tech workers and media workers can work from home. Although with that said, you know, the Atlantic just cut like 20% of its staff. We see huge cuts in journalism across the board. But there's some sectors where it's just like, you know, I don't have to commute anymore. Of course, you know, you're locked at home with the kids, but from a financial standpoint, it hasn't meant anything. For others, it has been debilitating. If you're one of those folks who are fortunate enough to not have any financial stress on your horizon and you enjoy the show, now would be a great time to become a member. You can do so at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, now we have merch at shop.majorityreportradio.com. Got a lot of great feedback on that. When you become a member, you not only get the extra content just about every day, and on Memorial Day, we're just going to have a member-only show. We're trying to work out what that will be. We're trying to see if we can find some old-timey Majority Report stuff, deep archive stuff to put in there. But you also get the show commercial-free, and that has value as well. Every now and then, we put in an ad for members that we are carrying because we want to really promote the product or we think that the members will like it. We do that. I think we did that with Sunset Lake CBD this week, right? The
correct
best 20% yep. off. We're going to run that ad today, but members can go back and find it. Maybe we'll keep it for members. I don't know. But all right. So let's get down to this. Donald Trump, this is a very weird way of, I know people who have gone in for tests and they get their results back. And it says, you know, essentially something to the effect of like the test is negative for the presence of COVID-19. Test is, negative for the existence of X, Y, or Z. It's not a complicated thing unless, I don't know, why would you make it complicated? You could be an idiot, or you could be an idiot who is trying to avoid answering a direct question and be a little bit obtuse. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Donald Trump answering the question, what's the results of your most recent COVID test?
And I tested very positively in another sense. So this morning, yeah, I tested positively toward negative, right? So no, I tested perfectly this morning. Meaning I tested negative.
Have you taken the antibody test yet?
But that's a way of saying it. Positively toward the negative.
Have you taken the antibody?
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe he just didn't, like, he got confused. And he said, I know I'm positive. No, I mean, negative. I don't know. Do you think it's just dumb? Or is he trying to be obtuse for some reason?
Yeah, that seems like it could be a way of saying I have the antibody, so I already had it, maybe. If it is a lie, that seems like those words would be his way of covering it.
Interesting. I don't know why they don't just release this as due course. I mean, of course, all of this stuff that they've been doing have been just completely disastrous in terms of saving people. We, 95,000 people now dead in the United States. They're unclear to me right now, like what's happening in terms of like growth, right, around the country. But New York, as a country, it's going. You know, we've certainly plateaued. It's going down in New York, And we may see a big drop off. I mean, who knows? But the virus is still there and it ain't going anywhere for quite a while, it seems to me. But I guess we'll find out. We have some good video of Donald Trump insisting he was not going to wear a mask and then, of course, wearing a mask. But let me just get to this. One of our sponsors today, Sunset Lake CBD. They're a mostly employee-owned business. They were a dairy farm producing milk for Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Then they decided to grow hemp. They use no pesticides, 100% pesticide-free. They use only organic fertilizers. Their business practices are stellar. $15 an hour minimum wage. Like I say, the employees own majority of the company. And their product is awesome. I'm using the tincture, I call it, like, right? That's what they call it, the oil. And I take a droplet of it every night before I go to bed now. And I'm sleeping better than I have ever slept before. There's also, I got my Sunday morning routine now down with their coffee beans infused with CBD. I've got some the rub with beeswax and arnica for, you know, when I'm sore. But they've also got like all sorts of actual buds, which I have yet to smoke. But, and they also have gummies if you're not into smoking, but I haven't tried those yet. But Matt, why don't you give us the report on the buds with the smoking?
Yeah, it's great. Like I said earlier, I was a skeptic of smoking CBD buds, but these are actually very pleasant and very, like organic, I guess. Multiple people have been saying on Twitter that they had the exact same trajectory as I had, with a skeptic to actually finding that this is actually something that's pleasant to smoke maybe before bed or when you want to calm down. So,
yeah, and I need that quite often. And you can get it now for 20% off. They're fans of the show. So when we said, you know, what do you want to do for a coupon code? They said left is best. One word, all small letters, left is best. Head over to sunsetlakecbd.com. Left is best in the coupon code. Get 20% off. Also, uncertain times, a lot of people are adopting pets, which is a good thing. And now there's an ability, you know, it used to be just like, what kind of dog is that? I don't know. It's just a mutt. Got a bunch of, I don't know. It looks like it's got this, it's got that. Now you can not only find out breed characteristics from your dog, but you can also find out, and this is, you know, I think even more important, frankly, risk factors for their health going forward with Embark DNA. Embark provides the resources to help you and your vet care to your dog's specific needs. They can identify over 350 breeds. They can screen for over 175 genetic health conditions. I think most dog owners know that like over 50% of dogs are either at risk or a carrier of a genetic disease. Embark will help you learn their health history and in many ways their health future. Kelly used Embark for Edie's, her dog Edie. And she said there's a ton of information about her. She tested clear for all the 171 genetic health conditions they screen for. She's not a carrier. She's not at risk for any of the genetic diseases that they screen, and 170 plus of them. There's also a full clinical trait report. So much great news, but more importantly, I can provide the report to her vet, which is going to help with so much information with Edie's health as she grows up. Different dogs, like people, respond to different types of food. And if you have a dog that has a genetic predisposition towards a disease, good to know that early. Treat it. Keep an eye out for it. We heard from a listener, Aaron, whose dog Gregor is his brother's dog Jacob's dog has been a huge help in Jacob's issues, like with socialization and whatnot. And knowing that they can treat that dog and take care of it the best they can has been a huge boon for them. And then there's also fun stuff where you can find out like the dog's cousins. Somebody on IM sent that to me, and that was pretty awesome. So check it out. Right now, Embark has an exclusive offer for just our listeners. You can go to embarkvet.com now. Use the promo code MAJORITY to save 15% off your dog breed and health kit. Visit embarkvet.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY to save 15% today. All right. We don't need to take a break, do we? Just bring on Brandon. Is he in the waiting room?
He's transitioning from the waiting room to live now. So,
oh, I love when that happens.
Somewhere in between.
Should I give him one of these? Just like, I don't think we have a song. Whoa. Whoa. You're going to have to fix that in post. Sorry, buddy.
I will.
That was crazy. Ladies and gentlemen, you may know him as Pretty Bad Lefty on Twitter. Or maybe you know him as the host or co-host. The host or co-host of The Discourse. Oh, my God! He's got his Majority Report T-shirt on. That's one of the old school ones. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. I'm always happy to be, you know, invited places.
And thank you for wearing the Majority Report shirt. That's one of the old school ones, right, isn't it?
I believe so. Let me just lower the camera down in case the people can't see. It there says The Majority Report. Well, it says the With Sam Cedar Majority Report, but, you know, I think it, you know,
that's the way we refer to it. That's the way
insiders, that's the official title, yeah.
That's the way insiders refer to it.
Old heads.
Now, remind me, are you the host or the co-host of The Discourse, or do you even make that distinction?
I mean, I'm the co-host. I'm the co-host. I have three other hosts who join me for adventures.
Great. How are you doing? How are you finding the lockdown?
I mean, it's fine. All of those open up gym protests I've been funding with my Patreon money haven't really come to fruition. So, you know, it might be a waste. I don't know how the Koch brothers, managed to get the Tea Party movement off the ground. Seems like a you know, real dip in quality.
You may need a little bit more money, Brandon. That might, you know, sometimes you just got to throw a ton of money at these things. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, there was an interesting story today, and, you know, I generally don't headline, something that Steve Mnuchin says. Okay. But he was in an interview with, The Hill's Bob Cusack during a virtual event, I guess. And, he said, we're going to have to carefully review the next few weeks. I think there's a strong likelihood we will need another bill, but we just have $3 trillion we're pumping into the economy. And so they're going to step back a few weeks and think very clearly how they need to spend more money and if we need to do that. I mean, it seems to me inevitable that they're going to have to. But it also seems to me it is at least encouraging that Mnuchin, for whatever reason, feels like he's got to concede this. Like, he is starting to sort of pave the road, as it were. So with that said, let's talk about how the Democrats have set up their ask, right? Because we know the Republican agenda is going to be to go in there and maybe diminish liability for corporations in this situation. They're going to go in there and they're going to just, I don't know, posture as if they need to cut down on safety net issues. Give me your sense of A, how the Democrats have set themselves up or are failing to for this, and whether you're encouraged at all by that sort of coalition that formed, I guess it was earlier this week, to push Pramila Jayapal's legislation.
Well, I mean, let's get take it in some chunks, right? So up until this week, up until the formation of that particular, you know, let's say special interest, not special interest, that group starring or promoting Pramila Jayapal's plan forward, I think the Democratic Party had largely abdicated responsibility for, you know, using the pandemic to further any real, you know, I would say even liberalish center-left worker-focused goals, right? It seems like they've mostly been focusing on, you know, bailing out lobbyists, a few sort of handouts to donors, and then maybe one or two concessions to the working class, you know, extra $600 per week. You can't just throw that. You can't, pretend that's not meaningful. But, you know, going in, I kind of, for some reason, had higher expectations of the Democratic Party that they might use this because, hey, yeah, Trump did bungle the first part. They might use this as a real opportunity to not just promote their brand, but actually, you know, force a few things in, like, you know, put the Republicans' feet to the fire. Like, if you don't, you know, actually help the working class out, then, you know, we're going to use that against you in the November elections. But what gives me a little bit of pause, even with the sort of the elevation of Pramila Jayapal, is that at least a decent portion of what I've seen from them so far has been more aligned with, like, let's see how bad Trump is going to make it. Let's see how bad the Republican Party is going to make it for the country. And then, you know, we're going to use that as more of a cudgel to force people to vote for us. And I think that that's the dangerous game to play. And one of the reasons why it's dangerous is because you have people like Steve Mnuchin who are going to come out and be forced to, just by nature of what's happening to the vast majority of workers in the country, make some kind of concession. And you don't want to see what happened at the beginning of the pandemic, which is Republicans somehow outflanking the left when it comes, or outflanking the Democrats, at least, when it comes to what they're offering. You know, if you have a Steve Mnuchin on the Republican side who's saying, yeah, we might have to hand out some more bailouts, and then you have a Larry Summers on the Democrat side who's like, you know, maybe yes or no, it seems as though the Republican Party might be in a more dangerous position when it comes to what they're expecting, or like what the Republican Party might just be have to do to avoid the sheer collapse, right? The Republican Party might be given just a little bit more, I don't know, impetus, because they're technically in charge of the government, you know, with Trump being president, to actually move forward with some kind of plan, while Democrats are just, you know, kind of, you know, dropping the ball here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like, right, that we have a couple of different horizons that we can look at when it comes to, oh my God. This is the biggest glass of water I've ever seen in my life.
That's a jug. You know, I drink water out of jugs because I have no lifters.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the smallest volume of water I can drink at any given point in time.
You know. All right, but I'm sorry. It seems to me like we have a number of different horizons, right? Like, we could look at this in terms of the November election. We could look at this in terms of the horizon of what we anticipate just the sort of lockdown or quasi lockdown to be, and then the horizon of how long will this economic event, the event as an economic phenomena, last, and then of course long term. And it seems to me that their strategy is exclusively about the election. And like you say, I think it's questionable in that regard. I mean, I don't know if the Republicans can get to the left in a meaningful way of Joe Biden, or, I mean, they could literally, but in terms of like the election, like, I don't think they're necessarily going to, I increasingly, I feel like a lot of this stuff is static. Now, it may be the case that if Donald Trump came out tomorrow and said, we're going to expand Medicare temporarily, then that would change the dynamic. But when you get into sort of like more small bore stuff, I'm not sure that's going to impact. But I think you're right. Like, there seems to be such a relentless, well, first off, I think Nancy Pelosi ideologically does not like to spend money, even though there's very real and increasingly more evidence, I think, like almost universal understanding that you need to in this situation. But I also think that they are refusing again to hold the Republican Party broadly to account. And so they don't want to put out a bill that will make distinctions between them and the Republicans. They just want to basically watch Trump fail, which I mean, I think it's a strategy, and I think he will, but it is, they're afraid to do anything for fear of any type of backlash.
I would agree with that. And let me just say before I continue that I like your mustache. It's very Bob's Burgers-y. It's very,
thank you.
It's very, very nice. Very full, not like mine, but you know, what can you do in these trying times?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think I think the sort of the fan fiction that comes out regarding like maybe Donald Trump just magically one day wakes up and decides to do like single pay or decides to push any number of like theoretically, you know, center left proposals or further left proposals through just as a mechanism for like getting the economy moving and making sure there's no like revolution is a bit out there. I think more dangerous is that the Republican Party would be seen doing something while the Democratic Party would be seen as doing nothing. When I think of that sort of this sort of calculation that the Democratic Party has kind of excluded from their calculus when it comes to understanding how voters are determining who to vote for, which is that, yeah, the Republican Party might be, let's say, fumbling any number of things when it comes to coronavirus, but for a good number of weeks, they were the only ones out there putting forth anything. No, the Democratic Party had mostly just gone home. The House had kind of gone home to eat ice cream. Joe Biden was missing more or less for a while. And the Republican Party was, you know, out there putting their face in front of the people, which it did in fact increase the, you know, marginally increase the amount that people felt like they were handling it, you know, well. And so there is, I think, a danger in creating a dynamic between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, you know, even just focusing on November, where Democratic Party is seen as useless and not actually doing anything. And Republican Party is just seen as like, well, they bungled it, but they were there, right? They were there.
No, I agree with this. And I think that, like, you know, and it seems to me it's been a failure from day one. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be just like the economic relief things. Like, there should be every day a message that all the Democrats are saying that, obviously, like, I think a lot of people are tuning out of, like, this kind of media, political media right now and whatnot. It's not, you know, the issues are not, you know, sort of like cut and dry. And but there could be a message that goes out every day. Like, for instance, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Joe Biden announced, you know, on Monday, we've all talked to, we've talked to a team of epidemiologists. There should be 70, I'm just throwing out numbers because I haven't, you know, sat down with epidemiologists to work this, but to successfully combat this, by June 7th, there needs to be an 83% saturation rate of availability of antibody testing across the nation. We need to have X number percent of people tested for antibodies. And then the next day they got to come out with, and we need X number of testing available for people across the nation to find out if they have coronavirus. We should have, as a nation, you know, 60% of the country covered by, you know, contact tracing apps by a certain date. So that way, like, you're setting up benchmarks so that the media can report, according to the Democratic benchmark, Republicans failed, right? Like just to give a scorecard for people who, are not that in touch with what's going on, and to make it, you know, a shorthand thing. Like, these are just simple, like, messaging stuff that would actually also be helpful in terms of getting the, because what the administration has done is twofold. One is their strategy they're following from a medical standpoint is, if we don't record it, because you've seen the stuff from the CDC where they have now commingled the data between testing for coronavirus and testing for antibodies. And they've commingled this data, making the data useless, but making it seem like there is less positive testing going on relative to the community. And therefore, basically hiding how much coronavirus we have out there. And it's all just basically a game plan. Like, you know, we're getting back to the days, I don't know if you remember this, the reality-based community, where they're just like, where the Bush administration said, you guys are in the reality-based community. We're not. We create reality. And that's what they're doing. They are trying to make people believe it's not there. And to a certain extent, it's obviously having
some impact. And Democrats should be out there just saying, like, here are benchmarks that they're failing to hit.
No, I mean, I agree. I think last time I was on the show, we talked about how the coronavirus, this might have been with Alex Perine, or maybe it wasn't, but how this is a battle in many cases, and this is the detriment of like society and public health, a battle of optics, because in many ways, that's what our entire political media apparatus has become. Like, who can sort of manufacture or construct the best optics, the best narrative in the media? And Democratic Party has been absent on trying to take control of this narrative from the beginning. They sort of just like abdicated control of the narrative with the hopes that Republican Party would do what they do, which is essentially funnel money from the wealthiest to, I mean, from the poorest to the wealthiest and leave large sections of society just completely bereft of help. And for, you know, that was a correct calculation for our Democrats because that's largely what's happened. However, I think when you're talking about what, you know, I had David Dayen on last week. I believe so did you, actually. And, you know, one of the things that he was holding out for in terms of Biden was that the realities of coronavirus, the realities of the long-term economic impacts of coronavirus on just unemployment and on, you know, the housing market might in some ways push Biden to do other things that otherwise he would not do. Just like the realities of having to, you know, this is not a left or right issue in some sense. It's just like, here's just what we need to do to keep the lights on. Here's just what we need to do to make sure we don't have like 40 million people in the streets, either hungry or rioting. The fear for that is that if you let things get so bad under Trump without some kind of, you know, without some sort of impulse to correct that narrative or position yourself as offering a real alternative, then that might just put Trump in the real position where like that Biden might have been in, which is like, okay, here's just what we have to do to keep the lights on. Here's just what we have to do to make sure we don't have people dying in the streets. And in the absence of, you know, Democratic Party that has a real structural solution or even just like a series of symbolic goalposts to put in front of them as like, here's what we demand that you do in order for us to consider what you're doing effective, then the Republican Party can just control and say, well, you know what? Like, we gave out $2,000 a month until it was over with Donald Trump's name on this on the check, and that's just a wrap. That's just what it is.
Right. I think a very good way of putting it. Because certainly, like you, I think it's unlikely that Donald Trump is going to roll out some type of grand, leftist proposal to save everybody, but. At the same time, this is a guy who is adept enough to know the last time he ran not to push cuts for Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, he's desperate in, I don't know, October 1, and he just says, that's it. Or September, he says, we're cutting checks. You know, cut checks. I want cut checks. And you don't want the Democrats to be in the position of like, no, you shouldn't be cutting checks. Like, you know, if they wanted to push that legislation, they could just push it. And Mitch McConnell may have a problem with it, but I don't know if Donald Trump at the end of the day would have any, you know, I don't think he's married to anything ideological. I think he's just wants to make sure that he gets reelected if he can.
Go ahead.
No, but I mean, I think your point is well taken. I mean, you know, we can hope that Joe Biden is detached enough from some type of agenda, which it really sort of feels like he is on some level, that he could be just faced with the idea of like, you know, just from pure Keynesian economics, you've got to just spend a ton of money right now. Who's to say that Donald Trump couldn't be subject to the same thing?
I mean, honestly, if this were a circumstance where you had the Republican Party by nature of the circumstances going on saying, okay, we're going to cut everybody a $2,000 check. And then the Democratic Party came out and actually sort of promoted some sort of big structural plan, like a big bucket of solutions, you know, strengthening Social Security, strengthening Medicare, you know, promoting single payer healthcare, just like real infrastructure to not only solve the problem as it stands right now, but also sort of put things in place so that this doesn't happen in the future, but also put things in place so that once this is all over, we're seeing just like people on an upward trajectory. That would be like a real conversation. The same way, you know, a conversation between a UBI only Andrew Yang type plan and UBI being part of a bucket of like structural changes would be a real conversation to have about the best way to deal with coronavirus. I mean, I think that Trump might just be getting bored. It's just like, and I think a lot of people might just be getting bored. I think, you know, drawing on the hydroxychloroquine Jesus, situation. Like, a lot of people sort of were promoting the idea that, hey, you know what, Trump, if he's promoting this, he's making money in some way doing this, which is possible. But I think just like, you know, a large portion of Americans who are, you know, tuning out political media in these times, he might just be bored of hearing of coronavirus. He might just be bored of hearing a news story go on for longer than 2 weeks or 24 hours. And I say that because the impulse then to just like, okay, well, I'm tired of people complaining, I'm just going to cut a check, becomes a lot more of a real, just like less of a calculated move, which I don't believe Trump makes, and more of just like a whatever, you know, like whatever, we'll just cut a check.
Right. All it involves is Jared Party might just Kushner go coming in and going like, we could just cut checks to everybody.
Yeah. Could just cut a check. And then it just, and then the Republican Party going like, okay, well, whatever, you know, cut a check. You have to spend it in the next 5 days. It is what it is. And like that. And then that puts it, like you said, Democratic Party in a weird position of coming out saying, okay, well, we don't want you to cut checks. We want you to means test or do some other nonsense that no one is going to really be interested
right,
in.
Right, right.
Just like...
Yeah, I mean, it. All right, well, let's pivot over to what's happening. I mean, just... I mean, right now, we're just in this sort of dead zone where Democrats have put that $3 trillion package...
I'm a thirsty guy.
Democrats have put out this $3 trillion package. It is maybe they're going to pass a separate piece of legislation to push Jay Paul's paycheck protection thing. But, you know, every day that goes by, that becomes less relevant. Because, like, to pay, well, I mean, we're going to hit the dates. The first dates of the PPP, I think, are probably coming up April, May, you know, within a week or two, it seems to me, maybe 3 weeks for the first round of the paycheck protection, because I think it was supposed to go 8 to 10 weeks. The second one is going to happen sometime in late June, I think it is. Presuming everybody, you know, got those on the first couple of days. So by the time we get into early July, you're going to have a lot of small businesses that are either going to be looking around and they're saying, okay, my business can't open because of the lockdown, or has to a certain extent, but people aren't coming because they're afraid still. Maybe that's when the Jayapal program of essentially paying companies to pay their employees, rather than going through like this whole rigmarole that's involved, would be impactful. Hopefully they pass that. But meantime, the Republicans, and maybe it's just a function of Donald Trump being a lunatic, are pushing this Obamagate thing. And for the life of me, I can't understand what the hell they think they're going to get out of this.
Frankly, I don't even know what Obamagate is in real detail. I heard it said, and it's one of those stories that I like looked into for a few seconds. I was like, you know what? This is not for me. This is not for me. It's just another series of things that, like, if I investigated every single thing Trump said, we would be in a different place. But I mean, I think that this is, you know, in many ways, it fits, from what I can understand, be true about Obamagate. Both the Democratic and Republican Party are in the pandemic, finding that large parts of their ideological toolkit that they've been working from for the past 30, 40 years are just simply not useful right here. The Democratic Party may be more so than Republicans in the sense that, like, this sort of vague appeal to, like, the symbolism of social justice, the sort of vague appeal to, like, you know, decency and propriety, you know, it's fine absent real material stressors coming down on you. But in the position where a lot of people are in right now, where, like, they went from having a job last week to not having a job this week, they went from having, you know, access to healthcare a few weeks ago, which they were told, you know, was going to more, which they assumed was more or less going to be moving forward into the future for, you know, through their employer, no longer exists. And that, I think, puts them in a very weird position where they're being forced to try to at least expand their ideological toolkit. On the other side, you have the Republicans, which is just like their ideological toolkit is racism. It's just like doing some racism. And for me, Obamagate, being sort of obsessed with Obama, that's just a callback to birtherism. That's just a callback to like the thing that like put Trump in the political spotlight. So I would not be surprised if this was just more of like lashing out, of like, you know, grasping at straws. He might bring out the wall again. Maybe the wall will see a resurgence. Just going, you know, just playing the hits, which is that there is a large conspiracy to protect Obama, that, you know, any number like that, like maybe he'll send him up to Hawaii again. But if from my perspective, like we're going to see, at least, I mean, I imagine we're going to see, at least over as if things continue to get worse, is, you know, just a bunch of grasping at straws until somebody, Republicans, Democrats, are forced to actually do something, actually do something that's a little bit more, you know, comprehensive.
It's a good time to play this clip that I was, and I remember this originally. It was came to my attention in a thread that Dave Nywert put together in response. We did this response to Meghan McCain 2 or 3 days ago, where she said that Obama ushered in Donald Trump. And my response, and my response has been for a long time about John McCain prior to even his death, was, this dude is responsible for Donald Trump because Sarah Palin was essentially like, was the door, the road, the, I mean, everything about Donald Trump that exists can be successful in our politics when he ran in 2016 was a function of Sarah Palin normalizing certain things that should have been out of the norm. And this speaks to also why Trump thinks Obamagate will work. But I also think it speaks to why Obamagate won't work, because this clip is from 2008 and Obama won. here, this is an Al Jazeera clip from a Palin rally in 2008.
A small town in the swing state of Ohio is where Sarah Palin addresses some of her core supporters. This area is mostly white and working class. And here's what some have to say about presidential candidate Barack Obama.
I'm afraid if he wins, the black will take over. It's not a Christian. This is a Christian nation. What is our country going to end up like?
When you've got a Negro running for president, you need a first stringer. He's definitely a second stringer.
He seems like a sheep or a wolf in sheep's clothing, to be honest with you. And I believe Palin, she's filled with the Holy Spirit, and I believe she's going to bring honesty and integrity to the White House.
He's related to a known terrorist, for one.
He is friends with a terrorist of this country.
He must support terrorists. You know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it must be a duck. And that, to me, is Obama.
Just the whole the Muslim thing and everything. I mean, yeah, everybody's still kind of, a lot of people have forgotten about 9/11, but I don't know. It's just kind of a little unnerving.
Obama and his wife, I'm concerned that they could be anti-white, that he might hide that.
I don't like the fact that he thinks us white people are trash, because we're not.
There you have it. I think, look, you can go to any rally and find, you know, some marginal people, but I've been to rallies like this. I went to the a couple of Glenn Beck's down on the mall, and not hard to find these people. Go ahead.
No, I agree. I mean, I think Obama conspiracy theories form the crux of a lot of Republican Party, either both fringe movements like the Tea Party. That was in many ways, like, they really adopted a lot of Obama conspiracy theories. And just like they eventually got folded into the party. You know, they talk about Obamagate. From what I recall, it was like a series of unspecified accusations and conspiracy theories. It's just one large bucket, which Trump had done in before, hoping that, you know, it just resonates with some people, right? So that you might, oh, he had my wires tapped, or he's anti-white. There's like grasping at straws, I think.
But I mean, how, like, we're in now May. The we're into the almost into the general election, right? For all intents and purposes. Why are they starting to unroll this whole thing now? Like, this is January of this year strategy. Like, who they're talking to a subset of the people that they need in the general election. And these are the people who they're talking to, the people who would allow him to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And it just seems bizarre to me. In fact, Bill Barr came out the other day and said, we will not be bringing charges based upon what we know, because they got this whole Durham investigation about investigating the investigators coming out. We're not going to bring charges against Joe Biden and Barack Obama, regardless of what they did. So he's setting it up like they did bad things. But he also, you know, but we're not going to charge them because he knows that they don't have anything to charge him with. But Lindsey Graham is squawking that he's going to try and bring these people in to testify. He obviously needs that in South Carolina. I understand that, why Lindsey Graham is doing it. But Donald Trump's going to need a little more than South Carolina to win. And reminding everybody about how bad Obama was because he was black and Muslim, I just don't see that that's going to bring out enough people to vote for Trump.
I mean, I don't think it's a real, like, legitimate thought out strategy. I think, you know, I think it's easy to sort of pretend sometimes that Trump is going through this, some sort of masterful mindset. But really, I think, and it's been true since before Trump was president, back to the Burka stuff, like, Trump has a little bit, maybe a lot of bit, of an insecurity problem, especially as it relates to Obama specifically. I mean, we remember at the, what was it, the White House Correspondents Dinner, and when, like, they made fun of the birther thing, and Obama, basically, they just laughed at Donald Trump to his face. They laughed at, you know, laughed at the very idea of him. And he's very thin-skinned. And so, like, there is a portion of this that is like, okay, it's red meat for base. It's red meat for the people, the most virulent race in the Democratic Party. You know, it'll get a few far-right senators like Lindsey Graham, so a few points in, like, South Carolina. But more so, it's just Donald Trump, again, I think, lashing out over Obama, who people are actively reminiscing about during his presidency right now. I think insofar why now is that there is more and more Obama, not apologists, but Obama nostalgia in the media and amongst the people towards, like, hey, Obama would be handling this better. Right. Obama would be doing better than, you know, along with George W. Bush. Like, I think that reminiscing might have actually boiled over. Like, oh, well, you miss Obama. Well, let me tell you about Obama. You know, he's actually, what was it, a gay Muslim terrorist? Like, you know, if only, right? But it turns out, like, no, of course not. Admittedly, not the weirdest conspiracy theory I've ever heard about Obama. I've heard that he's actually a clone of an ancient Egyptian prince. A lot of, like, you know, a lot of layers there. But Obama...
Wait, that's a conspiracy theory? I thought that was just given knowledge.
I mean, frankly, it depends on how far down the rabbit hole you want to go. But the larger point is that even outside the Republican Party, the first black president was the center of a lot of attention. How, you know, the fact that he won, the fact that he governed so long and was, you know, generally so applauded has animated a lot of conspiracy theories about him and just various reactionary parts of the, you know, America, just because of how, like, you know, that's supposed to happen.
I've been kicking around this, and I've read this, and a couple of people have told me this over the past couple of weeks. That one of a part of Biden's appeal to African Americans is that here was a, you know, relatively powerful white guy in his 60s, I guess, who was willing to have a black boss and basically be, you know, like second fiddle. Do you think that has any resonance in the African American community as to why Biden's appreciated to the extent that he is?
Not in so far as that, you know, he was willing to have a black boss. When the whole primary first started, I actually went around talking to a lot of people just in my neighborhood, you know, just doing a little impromptu. It's like, who's on people's minds, who's not on people's minds? And the names that I heard, especially from older black people, even in Brooklyn, you know, even amongst, like, people just in my direct, you know, engagement, was Biden, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, because they kind of liked his passion and his being animated towards, like, social justice, etc. But Biden specifically because Obama picked him, and they felt that that was sort of a stamp of approval. Like, hey, you know what? This is somebody that Obama would not mind replacing him as the president of the United States of America if the worst case scenario happened. The calculus that Obama chose him to kind of, you know, ingratiate himself with the older, you know, more right wing, especially on issues of social equality and race, part of the Democratic Party, is kind of lost to a lot of people, you know. But that sort of, like, Obama said this guy is all right is very much a big part of Joe Biden's appeal. And I would also argue it's a big part of why a lot of people are, you know, beholden to trying to defend Joe Biden and Joe Biden's past and Joe Biden's present past the point where I think it's reasonable. It's because it has to be like protecting Obama and protecting Obama's, protecting the opinion of people that Obama was making the right judgment call when it came to Joe Biden. When in reality, I mean, you know, it was a calculation that may or may not have paid off because he won, but a calculation that paid off. But like the actual calculus, I think, has been lost. It's been become like, oh, Joe Biden is just a trustworthy person.
Okay. So with that said, Brandon, and let's play this clip. We have a clip of, I'm sure that you're aware of, Joe Biden was on the Breakfast Club with Charlemagne Tha God. And so if that's the case that, you know, Biden has, he had this imprimatur from Obama. He has this imprimatur from Clyburn, you know, specifically South Carolina. A lot of that went a long way to getting Biden to, and he hasn't quite secured the nomination yet, but and hope springs eternal. But assuming he does, that's a big part of it. Here he is on with Charlemagne the God. I think he was joking here. I think, but the problem with Joe Biden's joke here, if it is a joke, is that it fits the formula that he said to many people on the campaign trail, and which is like, I'm you know, this is my standard. You don't want to vote for me, don't vote for me. But I you know, he's not, his, doesn't quite land a joke here. I mean, if I was Joe Biden's campaign people, I would have been like, you know, if you feel like you're about to make a joke about something like this, probably better not to. But here is the end of that conversation.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
Pause it for 1 second and start at the beginning. I should say there's a third voice you hear that I think is in Joe Biden's living room where his press handler is saying, like, hey, we have to move on, which, of course, you know, that's standard fare. Usually what happens, though, like when you're doing a radio interview, is they'll stand behind the candidate and they'll go, we got to wrap it because he's got to go do something or something like that. But here, so that's what that voice is. All right, go.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community.
Well, that's I guess that's all we got there from the end of that clip. But so, I mean... I feel like he was trying to make a joke. I don't want to, you know, do a joke construction thing. Like, it's hard to know what the laugh line part of that was. But what's your take on that?
Well, I just want to say I haven't watched The Breakfast Club since they replaced Molly Ringwald with Charlemagne the God. So I'm not the foremost expert on this.
Right.
I will say I think that Molly Ringwald will have challenged him a little bit harder there. But, you know, that's just, I don't know. I don't want to impugn anyone's character. But I mean, sure. If it wasn't a joke per se, let's say it was meant in jest, right? Let's say it was meant like he wasn't serious. Like you're literally not black if you don't vote. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Why not? It seems fair. I think the problem for a lot of people though is that reflects a certain level of entitlement that Democratic Party specifically feels to black voters vote essentially. And I think Charlemagne's response to that was, you know, maybe not as forceful as I would have been, but like true. It's like, it's not about being, you know, it's not about not knowing about Trump or not. It's about like, well, what are you actually offering the black community in, you know, in trade for their vote? Like the idea that you have to actually earn this vote or reciprocate on this block of voters that you feel as though is, you know, the core of Democratic Party's electoral strategy in many places. Okay, you know what? We got to have the black vote. Then there should be some kind of reciprocation there. But I think largely speaking, just within our culture, the idea that the Democratic Party, that politicians are responsible for like reciprocating a level of, you know, I don't know what you call it, reciprocating some sort of positive benefit for your vote has kind of been eroded. I think we've seen this slow supplantation of the American people as like voters and citizens who have rights, who have like, hey, you know what? If I vote for you, if I vote for Obama, it's, you know, if the black population votes for Obama, if, you know, the population of X votes for Obama, it's reasonable to expect that Obama or Joe Biden might do something for that population. I think it's been kind of a transition to Democratic Party, their base, their voters as fans. And it's like, and fans aren't entitled to anything in reciprocation for their support. They just are expected to do that per se.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, on just a purely rhetorical level, right? I mean, the argument, and I happen to think that there is some truth to the argument of like, you got two choices, me or Donald Trump, you know, if I'm Joe Biden, and I'm better, I mean, than he is. I think that's true.
That's fair.
I think it's incredibly lazy and indicative of being not a very good candidate if that's the if that's your pitch, right? Like if that's your pitch, and this seems to be their basically the whole premise of his campaign has been like, you got two choices. It's going to be me or Trump. If you don't like me, go vote for Trump. And you know, I happen to think that's true. But I think that doesn't necessarily mean that that's like the best pitch for you to go forward, because you still have to convince people to vote for you, and you need to offer them you need to show them why that's the case. Telling them is not necessarily the most effective thing. Like I say, I think it's true, but I don't know that, you know, that's the best way to make that case to people, particularly, you know, well, I mean, I think there are things you could roll out and say like, well, wait a second, we have a lot of truth here, you know, but you know, you could say something to the effect of like, look, we have, you know, there was a poll that came out today. Whoa, three times more African Americans and Latinos know somebody who's died from COVID than white people. And you could get into the structural reasons for that, and you could get into the societal problems, and you could say like, look, now it's not as funny or in jest, but you could say like, I'm committed to doing X, Y, and Z that Donald Trump would never contemplate doing. And, you know, even if you like, and maybe there's a, you know, there's a dark, funny way of making that joke. Like, you know, if you're voting for Trump over me, you're going to get your black card revoked or whatever, you know, like dumb 19, you know, I don't know when that was, that whole meme, but you're going to get that revoked or at least stamped or something. Like, you know, just some dumb joke. But if you can't execute that joke, don't do it, for God's sakes. Just be serious.
You should leave the problematic racial humor to the professionals like me. but no, I mean, I think Charlemagne, I think that you're right. I think that, you know, we can look at this objectively and say that like the Democratic Party in many ways are better than the Republican Party. Like that's just that's an undeniable fact. In many ways, they're not better enough. In many ways, they aren't better. But like, just if you're looking at the total picture from like in a vacuum, they are better. However, I think Democratic Party's brand, at least their electoral viability, has, you know, has always had the undercurrent of like, well, yeah, but if you're not with us, you're with them. You know, that was one of their bumper stickers too. And like, so at the core of their vote, you know, at the core of their party's electoral strategy, you know, is not structural change. It's not, you know, expanding Social Security. It's not, you know, establishing new bureaucracies or new institutions or new agencies to correct social injustice. It's just, you know, we're the other guys. And they rely on a large part of the people, you know, they rely on that kind of gap of proactively defining themselves to allow for their voters to sort of fill in the blanks. Well, if the Republican Party is racist, then we're not racist. If the Republican Party is this, then we're that. This sort of oppositional the definition of themselves. However, I think that what that strategy kind of forgets is that, like, people don't have to vote. You know, it's easy to try to shame people into voting, but yeah, you know, if you're not with Donald Trump, you know, you're with me, or if you're not with me, you're with Donald Trump, that kind of works as like, you know, a tautology or a cyclical reasoning. But, you know, people aren't trapped into a binary decision. They can just decide, well, Donald Trump is bad. Joe Biden, Democrats are feckless. They're effete. They don't really offer me anything. So I simply won't vote. And I think Charlemagne the God, you know, whatever problems he has, just by nature of not being beholden to like the sort of political media, like apparatus, plenty of people who just aren't going to vote, who are like, oh yeah, I'm not going to vote for those people because, like, you know, whatever. I mean, like, they're not doing anything. I voted for Obama because Obama was black, or I voted for Obama because Obama was saying, you know, progressive things. Joe Biden's not offering anything, and is not offering any of that. And he can't even be bothered, I think, you know, and this speaks to sort of Democratic Party relying on Trump.
Yes. Yes. I think that's the key. I mean, you're going on a show. It's like, you're not going on Chris Hayes' program.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're not going on, you know, you're not on with Joy Reid. you're on with a largely, like, you know, an apolitical show for the most part. And you're reaching, you know, a lot of potential non-voters. And you've got to give them a compelling reason. And he failed to do that. I mean, that's just like poor campaigning.
But it is.
Joe Biden.
Like, even if I were to say, okay, well, yeah, Joe Biden has this platform. I don't particularly believe that he's going to be proactive in enacting all things. You could at least try. I mean, you could at least try, just from, like, agnostically from my position as somebody, like, hey, I'm not really into Joe Biden. But I can recognize that, try. Like, you know, people, give people opportunity to believe in you if you really think that they can. But, you know, in this case, like, we're seeing, I think, Democratic Party's viability stripped down to its barest bones. We're not them. Don't look too closely at what we actually are. Just sort of, like, fill in the blanks yourself. They don't want to say anything too, like, strict or concrete that they might define themselves as. Instead, it's like, we're the party of not Trump. And so, but I think you have to at least engage with the fact that for a lot of people, that's simply not enough, because they don't recognize in their life the difference between living under Trump and living under Obama as anything than a slow trajectory downward. You know, maybe it ramped up a little bit, maybe it didn't, you know, maybe it sort of went worse faster, but there hasn't been just a time where they can recognize, like, just doing better because of Democrats.
Brandon Sutton, folks can find you on Twitter on Pretty Bad Lefty, and they should tune in. How many times a week are you doing the discourse? One time a week?
I do discourse twice a week or more, depending on how often I can wrangle someone to talk to me. So, I mean, you can find, we have one episode that came out this week and last week with David Dayen that's free to listen to. I have another episode coming out probably tomorrow or, you know, Sunday with Andrew Perez, editor who works with David Sirota. And so, you know, tune in if you're interested. Right. And of course, you can always become a patron too at, you know, if I can afford to fund better protesters to open up gyms.
There you go. Where can people become a patron?
Well, you can become a patron of the discourse at patreon.com/expandthediscourse. I thought it was catchy at the time. Kind of, you know, it's a little bit, you know, right, corny now, but still.
Yeah. Well, you can't change that. Brandon, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it, man.
No, thank you. Always a pleasure. Don't shave the mustache.
Thank you. And I think we're gonna somehow make a meme out of that jug.
I mean, it's just the way I live my life. You know?
And you freeze it? Is that a big ice cube in there too?
No, I forgot that I left it in the freezer, and so it froze. And now I'm just forced to deal with that. You know?
I like the idea of that whole thing, though. But, you know, Brandon, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
All right, folks. Now, Matt, do we need to take a quick break?
Are you going to call? You're going to call him. He's not going to be over Zoom.
No, I think he's going to be on Zoom, isn't he?
Oh, well, then he just needs to get himself into
the heck is Film Guy Matthew? Did you get that email from him, Brendan?
Brendan also seems to have disappeared, so it's just you and I right now for some reason.
What?
I'm not sure what's going on here. He seemed to have dipped from the Let's see if he texted.
That's weird. I have not heard from Brendan at all.
He's not having internet troubles. Let's see. I thought he
might be out. I could try and call Matthew.
Oh, Matthew, here he is.
Oh, has he shown up?
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. Wait a second.
Sorry.
Don't show him yet. Let's do this.
Well, I need time to get his song anyway.
Oh, right. Because we were supposed to have that from Brendan. Brendan took an early vacation.
Early Friday.
Super casual Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, here, let me just, I'll do this while we're waiting here. Do this.
I'm here, guys.
Well, we don't want to talk to you yet because we need to set up. So why don't you mute your thing while Matt gets his stuff together. Folks, just going over some of the news. This story about Mike Pompeo, just check it out, a Talking Points memo. Mike Pompeo reportedly ordered officials at the State Department to come up with a rationale for his decision to declare an emergency last year that he used to bypass Congress in his billion-dollar arms sale to Saudi Arabia. Matt, you removed him from the show.
Oh, I thought I... Crap. Yes. Well, tell him to click the link again.
Click the link again, Brendan.
I tried to remove Brandon, not Brendan.
Oh, I see. I see.
I think he is.
But, you know, the Senate and the House were getting very skeptical about these Saudi Arabian deals. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the idea of emergency, but when you have an emergency, you don't need to construct it. It is the very nature of an emergency. And when you've asked someone to construct an emergency to bypass Congress for a $1 billion arms sale, that is something you would want the inspector general to look into, the State Department, if that person was not fired. So people should check out that story at Talking Points Memo. This Pompeo thing, it seems like it's one of those rare occasions where Democrats are like, hey, we are going to look into this and use our massive oversight powers to look into this, despite the fact that we're not doing that for anything else. But folks can check that out at Talking Points Memo. In the meantime, Matt, do we have Brendan's thing?
I'm working on that right now. I'm trying to add it. It's a kind of a permanent removal situation. So I'm going to try to get Brendan.
You just permanently remove Brendan from the show?
So what happened is on the list.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that.
Brandon Sutton removed himself right as I was about to remove him. So it moved Brendan down the list, and then I accidentally removed him. So hopefully.
I'm trying to see if I have Film Guys, Matthews.
Shit.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have your sound effect today, Matthew. I am really sorry about that.
Again, Sam.
What's that?
That's fine. I'm used to it. Time? No, that's fine. Who's really keeping track of this stuff? Not me. It's fine.
Well, I don't know. I look at it. Now, what is going on with your audio? You're a professional audio video guy, and your audio is really not great. Where are you calling from?
I'm in my office, same place I do all my Zooms. How's it sound now?
It's not good. It sounds like you're using your computer audio instead of your microphone, if you're using a microphone. Or are you using those, like, earbuds?
Yes. That's what I use for all my Zooms.
Yeah, I got news for you. They're not telling you, but your Zoom sounds horrible.
I'm sorry, Sam. Let me see what I can do.
Is your microphone one of those things that go around the wire like this, or is it just in ear?
Hold on a second. Let me try this.
Does this audio sound any better?
It does a little bit better. Yeah, if you turn it up a little bit.
Okay, let's try that.
Yeah, well, I mean, your visual is so weird. It sounds like you're in a box, so that I think that works. I think people are, I mean, do you do this on your business meetings? Do you do, like, this whole thing going on in the background there?
No, don't you recognize the background, Sam?
Is it Tron?
It's Max Headroom, Sam. I'm talking to you from 20 minutes in the future.
Oh, there we go.
All right, I'll lose it. I'll lose it. There you go.
Oh, jeez. Oh, wow. And, man, look at you with the beard. That beard is pretty bushy.
I'm pushing it. Mary's giving me a little grief for it, but I'm going to see how long I can take it until it basically self-destructs.
Wow, and your apartment's looking good. You've done a lot of good work in there. I just remember
it being
a lot more of a bachelor pad and, like, a little bit messier, maybe.
I may have made one or two changes in the 15 years since you saw it last.
Has it been 15 years?
Something like that.
No. I imagine I was there in 12 years ago.
All right. Still, in the past 5 years, it's really the curve has gone way up.
Well, I can imagine. And I can imagine because of your eBay page that you...
That's right. All you see here is all thanks to eBay.
Yes. You really arrived. So, Matthew Film Guy, this is a rare occasion. Well, we see you in studio on occasion, but now we get to see you on camera in your abode. Not terribly surprising, surrounded by what appears to be DVDs and film posters.
Those are books, but, I've gone all virtual. Yeah, here, this is, you want to see, this is a little more.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
That's actually Mary's side of the room. If you're really interested, this is the.
Wow, look at that.
There, this is the Matthew side.
Now,
of
is
things.
That the old edit bay? Is that it?
Well, here I'm sitting at my edit bay here.
Uh huh. Wow.
You know, as a hashtag film guy, I have to have three giant screens.
Like that. Yeah, look at that. All right, pretty good. Meanwhile, I wish
there
we could
go.
Have like a. I wish we
Ribs.
Could do. All right, thank you. Okay, take it easy. I wish we could have like a B story going on in terms of Brendan's attempts to get into the Zoom. But so Matt,
I'm happy to stall.
What this, in many respects, must be like for you, heaven, where the whole world is put on hold. And really, you are basically told, stay at home and watch stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I've been preparing for this my entire life. And, you know, to the extent that I haven't even been able to fully enjoy the apocalypse, it's because I've been getting work and I kind of am now resenting it. Why is everybody else laid off and scared where their next meal is coming from, yet can watch films and TV? But I've managed.
So you're getting a lot of work. I mean, because you're an editor, you're doing exactly what you would be doing at any other time. But what do you?
Well, I wouldn't say a lot. You know, like for instance, the film Black Bear that I edited that played at Sundance. You know, I got an agent right after that, and film production has just gone in the tank. So there's nothing really happening with that as of now. So that's a big bummer. Right as I was on the precipice of getting involved more.
You took a page out of my career. And had your like peak moment of leverage coincide with something that was completely out of your hands, and it just went away.
Was your thing completely out of your hands? What was that?
Well, when Pilot Season was bought by Trio Network, and they played it like literally, it was their first
the network
fiction. They were the first fiction show that they bought. And then they were sold and closed like 2 months later.
Yeah, yeah. But that was a good show. That was a good show. It'll have its time.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that was...
I thought you were going to say the Iraq War started and you just had to like, you know, you do this now. Like, that's what changed your life. That's like a more World War kind of a thing.
Well, that was my own decision. You know, that was my decision.
Well, in that case, yes, it's something similar like that happened to me. A cable station closing, a pandemic hitting. They're pretty close. They are in the long term.
I mean, very similar. Very similar.
Yeah. I'm still, you know, I work with Ted Alexandro, so thank God for him. All the comedians are now basically doing stuff online. So his video content has gone way up. You know, we did a special called The Stay at Home Comedian that got a nice write up in the New York Times. Oh. So that's leading to doing more stuff like his Instagram live stories and, you know, now we're doing a new special made up of just all the clips that they would record in the back of the clubs. So, like, the production values have gone down, but people don't care. They're star for content, if you will.
Right.
And then I'm still doing his podcast. Now it's gone up to twice a week. So that's keeping me busy, and that's fun stuff. Not as lucrative as some of the other stuff. And then, a few other just, you know, commercial corporate stuff. But
commercial corporate stuff right now? Like, how are people shooting? Are you aware of them? Are they shooting anything right now?
Did you guys play that every Corona commercial is the same video? That is some genius stuff right there. So all that clinky piano stuff. None of those have crossed my desk directly yet. But actually, I'm dealing with stuff that was shot before this was all happening, and they're just assuming it's still going to be relevant. So a few things have to be reshot, but it's, you know. But back to your first point, yes, I am trying to make it seriously part of my film guy sort of, just the dedication persona to the art of film guy is to see as many films as possible. And I think I'm knocking them off the list with some pretty good regularity. I'm still also doing, as you know, my senior citizens film appreciation class. That's all going on through Zoom, which has been fun.
Now, didn't you open that up to? Is that just senior citizens? Didn't you open that up to the?
Yeah, we've got a few upper middle age people even. So like yourself, young people like yourself. And I think actually we got someone from the Majority Report who signed up, as a matter of fact. But I don't think they've actually come to class. So I don't know if they considered it like a donation. But if you're out there, join us. We'd love to have you. But yeah, the demographic
like my kids
is skewed a bit younger.
Homeschooling.
Yeah, that might be it. I'm actually getting a chance to see some of the longer, more sort of difficult films.
Well, if people want to be in the class, what would they do?
I'll resend you the link, and it's basically $10 a class, 6 classes for non-members, and you get a link of the film sent to you the previous week, and then you watch it. And then on Tuesday at noon, we get on Zoom, and we have a very interesting, wide-ranging discussion about the film. It's not exactly very academic, but it's kind of my goal is to sort of bring more films to people that they wouldn't have sought out otherwise. Something a little bit more challenging than what you would just pick yourself or what the algorithm would pick for you on Zoom or on Netflix. And I have access to some more wide ranging films that might be right there. So yeah, wink. So it's fun for me. I basically got to the point where I just show movies that I've been meaning to see, and then I sort of lead a discussion having just seen it for myself for the first time that week. And it's great. It's a lot of fun.
All right.
I'll just say some very intellectually curious upper middle age to senior citizens are in this class. So it's a good group.
All right. That's good. Well, I'm not surprised. I would imagine that your classes attract a high caliber.
I've built quite a following. You're right. Is that what you meant to say? Yes, I have.
Yes, of course. Have you been eBaying through this? Because I would imagine this would be also like
a few. Yeah, a small uptick in eBay things. Again, it's the detritus that really is what's filling my stores these days. I don't know if I'm going to be able to unload it, but we watched that film Dark Waters with Mark Ruffalo. Have you seen this movie?
Oh, actually, no, but I have interviewed on multiple occasions the lawyers that it's about.
I seem to recall that as I was watching the film, I knew a lot about this case already.
Yeah, this is the
CA case. And as soon as Mary and I got done watching that, we're going to get rid of all of our Teflon. So if anyone's out there who wants some slightly used Teflon that you don't care what it does to you, that might be going up on eBay.
Just to be clear, this is the C8 case. Mike Papantonio, I don't know if that they reached to where he was the litigator. He was the one who actually went into trial at the end of this thing like 3 or 4 years ago. In fact, people can go back. Wow. You could go back actually and piece together the initial lawyer. I've interviewed him at least once or twice on Ring of Fire. Other lawyers working on the ultimate litigation that happened, and it was basically DuPont. They were making Teflon pans.
Yeah, that chemical.
They were buying
CA
a chemical
runoff
from 3M, which is the chemical it's a chemical used to make Teflon. It's not the actual Teflon.
Yeah.
3M basically said, "Look, you have to burn this because it's so toxic and it has no." Essentially, for all intents and purposes, has no half-life. We have it in all of our bloods because it doesn't like degrade. And so once a drop of it gets into the water, it just keeps traveling around forever, essentially. And of course, DuPont was like, man, it's expensive to burn this. What if we just dumped it in this river here? And that's what they did. A farmer found that it was killing his cows. He got in touch with a lawyer, and it's about this lawyer is the movie, who like through his grandma or something like this, and the farmer ultimately died of cancer as well. The lawyer ended up getting a settlement. He said after he won that case, he said maybe there's other cases here, and they ended up getting a, which had never been done before, an independent board of epidemiologists who studied the disease within a certain perimeter cases of different diseases that should not have taken place. And ultimately, Mike Papantonio was the lawyer who went in to litigate the first couple of those cases.
the defense gets one, and the plaintiff gets one, the defense gets one, and then they sort of start to negotiate, and it ended up a huge settlement that bankrupt DuPont.
Well, you might want to leave some for people to watch the movie, because some of this is the drama of the film. It's actually very interesting, and if you don't know the outcome, it is touch and go there for a little while.
Spoiler alert, if you've listened to the show for an extended period of time.
Right, yeah. It's still entertaining, even though I somewhat knew where it was going. But do you think you interviewed the person played by Mark Ruffalo? He was like the original lawyer who was like, he was like a plaintiff's attorney at first. Yes. And then
he was working for a corporate firm, essentially.
Yeah.
And his grandmother said, like, oh, I got this message from, you know, Myrtle.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first 5 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so that was something. Pretty good. You know, that was directed by Todd Haynes, who made one of my favorite movies of all time, Safe. So, yeah.
Boom.
So,
I knew what it was.
You knew what it was because it's one of the best movies of all time. Everybody
I've watched that movie multiple times.
And with like being afraid to go out and things getting on you, it's like another great movie for of this time. Slightly different, but it's a great one. But, I don't think this movie was as great as that. But that one definitely led to we need to get rid of some of our cookware, get some new cookware. So now we're going ceramic.
Ceramic. Good for you. Cast iron's also good, but whatever. Steel.
Too much of a pain in the ass for me. I know my limits. I can't keep a good cast iron.
I understand. I did watch Contagion to just get
that's a
sense.
That's a spooky one.
It is a little spooky. I didn't think it was that great of a movie.
No, look, Steven Soderbergh, he never makes a bad movie. Like, he'll never make, like, a movie you're just like, what was this? But, like, he's such a, like, he just puts them out with such regularity and such sort of a confidence. And that one's a good rip from the headlines kind of movie that it's still.
It's worth watching. I mean, if I had seen that weeks ago, I would have known R-naught is pronounced R-naught as opposed to R-0.
When I know. And now you love saying R-naught. I drink it. Every I time you say R-naught.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. So, Matthew, film guy.
Yeah. Yeah, what else?
What should we watch? I mean, give us a couple because, you know, people
as I indicated, I got a ton. And people, I still want to recommend people go to my letterboxd.com/LangdonBoom. That's my...
And they don't need to listen to you on the show, don't we?
No, this is for more. This is for more. So I say that up front to dangle it out there if you want to join me in my journey. But here's the movie that I saw this last week that just blew my mind. It's a filmmaker whose work I've been trying to see for a while. She's a German filmmaker named Maren Ade. And she made a film in 2003 called The Forest for the Trees.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best sort of low-budget indie dramas that I have seen maybe ever. It's got that sort of awkward, cringe comedy kind of thing. You may also be tempted to call it sort of German mumblecore if you didn't want to be too generous to it, but it is much deeper and a lot less sort of solipsistic than some of the worst mumblecore. It's shot like on DV. I believe it even was her Berlin Film School thesis film. But it's about a woman who's moves to a new town to become a teacher in a school and just struggles to make friends. It's got one of these very sort of low concept sort of bases, but it's just one of the greatest kind of dramas that I've seen. And it defeats your expectations. It does give you some laughs. And it's like, now I've got to see all of her films. That she got a lot more famous for her film called Tony Erdmann that some people may know. I'm working my way up to that one, but I'll probably come back to you the next three times I'm on here with more of her films because I fell in love with her.
And okay, the movie is Forest for the Trees, and the filmmaker's name is?
Maren, M-A-R-E-N, Ade, just A-D-E. You know, the Germans have a different pronunciation for everything.
Yeah, I know. It's like a totally different language. Okay, so Forest for the Trees. What else you got besides that?
I also showed my class the Lars von Trier movie Melancholia.
I didn't see
that's
that,
about right? The end of the world. That's about, like, you know, utter destruction of the entire planet. And it's one of these sort of like oxymoronic kind of movies where a movie that's deliberately about everything ending actually left me with this feeling of just like, hey, you know what? It's all going to be okay. Like this really great sense. You know, I've loved for years the films that give you kind of like a death trip, like you kind of like practice dying and then you let go and you get afraid, but ultimately you achieve a sort of transcendence when you realize that nothing ultimately is destroyed, it's just transmuted. And this was one of those movies. And Lars von Trier, you know, he's basically an a-hole with a video camera, you know, or film camera. Right. He likes he messes with people. He's made some great movies. He's made some horrible movies. But this is like a very sweet movie about, it's basically like, you know how sometimes when you're depressed and you feel like everything's going wrong? Well, right. Sometimes it is really going wrong.
Correct.
And that's okay.
Right. Right. There's depression. There's depression that is a function of maybe chemical or issues that you have internally. And then there's depression that's like, oh, you're having a normal reaction to a very depressing event.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, this movie, I seem to think, it says, like, people who are depressed do have a sort of insight. Like, it's not all just disease. Like, there is a kind of sensitivity that's common to people with depression about certain things. You know what I mean? So letting those things in isn't a disease. It's a strength in some ways. And it's just, like, when you think the movie is going to just, like, twist the knife and torture you, it doesn't, which is, again, kind of a rarity for Lars von Trier. So it's one of his most uplifting movies, if you could say that about a movie about the world ending.
Now, it's been a long time, as you know, Matthew, probably more than any person around. Von Trier was a big, not necessarily
Dogma
influence.
95.
Yes, Dogma 95 was a, and Vinterberg too, that did. Like those, I was very, very much into those movies back in the time when I was a filmmaker and wasn't necessarily inspired to do what I was doing, but I was in, I sort of felt like I was a little bit in like, not competition with them, but like they were of that moment.
Guys were on a somewhat parallel track.
Are they still doing that kind of film or no? Are they?
No. That was a period that they did for maybe about 5 years. But, you know, Vinterberg's last movie was like a submarine thriller. You know, like they've gone back to bigger stuff. And Lars von Trier, his last four or five movies, they've all been just like gorgeous, high-resolution photography. Even Melancholia, there's like these painterly kind of non-narrative kind of interstitial moments that are just really messing with the form. So he's gone back to kind of sculpting with the image and not stripping it down.
And is he still... is he still, my daughter is texting me during the show. She's saying, nobody likes your mustache and watch Outer Banks. I don't know what that means.
Myla Film Girl. That's fine. Yeah. You bring her on.
She's really itching to get on the show. Is Von Trier still like afraid of flying? Wasn't that a big issue for him?
Yeah. Yeah, he's still a nut job. He's still personally a very problematic individual. But, you know, listen, some weirdos made some great movies, and he's right on the top of the list.
All right. Do you want to give us one more? I mean, I know that's two.
Yeah.
But
I can give you two quick.
A little bit more accessible, right? I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are like, I don't want to go a foreign film. Not now.
Yeah, but now is especially now. Now you have more time. Now you can watch you can binge watch your shows. I mean, listen, I'm getting to the end of the fourth season of Knight Rider too. So like I've got both things going on.
Okay. You know what? And then I want you to also give me a show to binge because I haven't had much time to be honest with you to watch TV.
No, I get it. We need you on that wall.
I have not had much time at all. I mean,
you've been enjoying the apocalypse as less than anybody basically.
I mean, it's not inconceivable that, but I mean, there's a lot of people who got a lot worse, but I have not had time to binge watch shows.
True.
But
I'll bang a pot for you.
I mean, there's no more Survivor, so I got that hour has opened up for me. So if I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna do it once, you know, an hour a week. What am I gonna watch? And then I want you to give us one more movie for people.
All right, I don't have anything for you along the lines of Survivor. I got no time for reality.
No, I know not Survivor, but I mean, what show?
Actually, let me tell you this. Let me tell you something that this might become out of left field.
I watched that. I know that.
No, I got nothing. I do know the last reality show I think I watched.
No, I don't want a reality show. I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying that my slot has opened up.
Okay, your slot. So now I understand that you're sort of stuck at home with the extended family, right? Like, so there may be some need for some crossover viewing. Is that possible?
We don't do that.
No? Okay.
Myla stays in her room, watches everything on her iPhone.
All right.
Right, well, Myla? Yeah, she's going to respond to that. But go
well, ahead. I was going to say that a show that I actually was surprised that I really liked a lot, which could work as a crossover, but also just works as a sitcom with like a bit of heart and a bit of intelligence, is the early 2000s show Gilmore Girls.
No.
Like a real teenage girl show. No. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. Listen to me. Listen to your film guy. It is an extremely intelligent, well-written, not just a teeny bopper show. And it will tear your heart out. And it is actually funny in a kind of His Girl Friday patter kind of comedy way. But okay, I see from your mustache.
Gilmore Girls,
you don't like that
that's
one.
For Mila. Mila, you can watch Gilmore
but,
Girls.
But it's one that you could watch together, I'm pretty sure. In terms of shows, I don't got anything else for you, Sam. I'm still trying to catch up on Better Call Saul. Shows have gone by the wayside for me. It's either total trash like Knight Rider or I'm watching a film that I have to pay attention to.
I can't believe you're watching Knight Rider.
Yeah, but okay. So I'll just move on. I'll just move on to the next movie. Have you ever seen the Robert Altman movie California Split?
No.
That's one for you. It's considered a kind of minor Robert Altman, but I'm not the hugest Robert Altman fan to begin with. But this one really knocked me out. It's George Segal and Elliot Gould play two guys that just meet at a poker game. And kind of just like have a mutual obsession with gambling. And it's sort of a ramshackle narrative with all the overlapping dialogue and all the sort of choose your own adventure, mise en scène where you're not sure where to look. And just that Robert Altman kind of world as they try to just sort of either manage their gambling habit or to, you know, get ahead in the game. And it's just like a great slice of life for these guys. And it's about like buddy friendship. It's really, it's a great movie, and it's one of my favorites of his now.
I mean, Altman and there's a bunch of Altman movies I really like. Like Long Goodbye was great.
That's
McCabe
still
and Mrs.
my
Miller.
Favorite.
McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
That's probably close second. This is not necessarily like that. It's not as like much of a genre riff, although I guess you could call it the gambling movie genre. It's just more just, you know, this feels more closer to the Cassavetian kind of like husband thing.
I was going to say, it sounds like that.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's got a sense of humor. It's got, again, the thing about Altman is the way he composes his scenes. You're competing for focus. It's not really telling you exactly where to look. You got to pick up stuff that's going by. So that one's, I think, again, for you. Also, given the mustache you're wearing, the 70s feels like right in your wheelhouse right now. So I would say go for that if you can. Although I don't think that Elliot Gould has the mustache in this one, but you bring your own and it's probably just as good.
Right, right. All right, well, Film Guy Matthew, you certainly have given us a lot of stuff to watch and think about. And as always, I have 100% confidence in your picks. And, you know, much less confidence that I will actually get to watch them. But other
That's
people...
That's fine. We're providing a service. Yep.
Stay safe. Say hi to Mary. Hopefully we could maybe get together soon in real life, a drink or something to that effect.
It's got a real next year in Israel feel to it, but thank you for that.
Hope springs eternal.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you, Film Guy Matthew. All right, folks.
Bye, Sam.
Bye, Matthew. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head to the fun half of the program. Matt, we have lost Brendan. Is that right?
Yeah, it appears as if you're unable to return once you've been removed by the host, and me accidentally removing him gave him an early exit today. So he's trying to maybe use
a
VPN.
Very, very, very convenient for him.
He owes me. He's certainly not just frantically trying to get back in for the next hour.
Hold on
for
one second. Hello? Okay, Mila's telling me that Outer Banks is a TV show. Gilmore Girls is really good. Are you on my show right now? Sort of. I mean, you're interrupting it. Huh? I'm not on a break. I'm talking to Matt. Okay. Maybe another time, sweetie. Maybe next Friday. Next casual. Okay. All right, you got to shut the door. And it's whatever. Dad's just doing a show. I love you too. Dad's just doing a show. I can go in. It's not a big deal. Whatever. 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 At least we're not yelling at the top of our lungs today. Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes the show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Again, a lot of people have had to step back during this era. If you're one of those people who don't have the financial stress, now would be a great time to join. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. They're shipping through this. I've been drinking Bike Fuel and Los Diosos and obviously the Majority Report blend. So check that out. And AM Quickie, still going strong, amquickie.com. Don't forget, check out TMBS. Who was on TMBS this week? Oh, I remember. It was Big Waz and Nando, right?
Yeah, we had a Woke Bros show, and it was really great. So check
that
out.
What is this Woke Bros? What does that mean?
Woke Bros is like Wando, Michael, and Waz do this. It's on their, I forget if it's the Count the Dings Network or something adjacent to that, but they, it's like just they're a bunch of Woke Bros.
Okay, so, there you go.
Pretty self-explanatory.
You can check that out at The Michael Brooks Show on YouTube and TMBS, or I should say patreon.com/TMBS. Check out Noma Key Kant's show. You can find that on YouTube. I think it's Noma Key Kant's on YouTube, and it is the Noma Key Show on patreon.com. Noma Key Show. And who did she have on? Was it John Nichols this week? I think maybe she may have. I think they talked for hours too. I mean, you should check it out. John Nichols is, I know he was on the program yesterday, but he's a wealth of information and always worth checking him out. Jamie, are you there?
She should be here.
Well, Matt, why don't you? Oh, there she is.
Whoa,
Jamie, look at your backdrop. You've changed where your camera is.
Oh, yeah. I decided I'd swivel around a little bit, show off some of the things on my wall instead of my, like, galley kitchen hallway area.
Oh, I like this much better. And how's Jamie's volume?
It'll get better in about 20 seconds, I imagine, halfway through a pitch. It just takes time for the mic to warm up.
Weird. Okay.
Got a cold mic, folks.
There, now it's already better.
All right.
So, Jamie, what's on the Antifada this week?
Oh, well, this week on the Antifada, I had a pretty chill girls chat kind of episode with my friend Heather Fortune, great musician, formerly of the band Wax Idols. We talked about all sorts of things, most importantly, the new Fiona Apple album, which we both agree is amazing. I kind of channeled some of your vibe on Casual Friday, Sam, where you're just kind of like catching up with a friend on the phone. So hopefully people will like that. I've been dealing with a lot of really heavy stuff lately. Not that Fiona Apple is not also very weighty, but it was fun. Also today, for patrons, we have a new episode of Prolit Cult, which is Andy's little side project on the paranormal, the parapolitical, and conspiracy theories. And this one is all about Space Force. Remember Space Force?
It's still out there.
Yeah, he does a little check-in on Space Force. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm sure it's very good. Yeah. And this weekend, I hate to jinx stuff by talking about it before it happens, but it's on the schedule. It's happening. We're having on Winnie Wong from the Bernie Sanders campaign, so we'll see how that goes. I think she mostly wants to talk about aliens.
Aliens, okay. Fair enough. Matt.
At twitch.tv/literaryhangover, I am playing Metro Exodus and listening to Yevgeny Zamyatin's 1920s novel, We, which wasn't released in Russia, his native Russia, until 1988. It inspired Brave New World in 1984, so it's thematically interesting. So check that out. I think I'll be streaming tonight, folks.
All right, folks. Can't get over. That's actually a show, what you do. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Take some phone calls. 646-257-3920 is the number. We won't have time for many today, would be my guess. Well, maybe we might not even take any calls. Well, yeah. All right. Yeah, we will. 646-257-3920, and we'll put on the IMs too. All right. See you in the fun half.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Grandpa. I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.